Alrighty, everyone coming in. Welcome, welcome to our fourth version of this class, and we'll just keep going on. Like I say, I've got handouts in store for at least seven of these because of the topics, and probably even more than that as we go through things. And if I run out of new things, we'll start over again with some of the older things because we really are just lightly touching the surface on many different things. And there's a lot of different breathing techniques out there for us to experiment with and to practice, and knowing that this that we're doing right now is one of the ways that we can immediately make it where we're reducing our stress level. And so that's probably one of the bigger things that we can do is change our stress level by learning to control our breathing. So it's something that many of us have an intention to do. Maybe we practiced it long ago. Maybe we don't, have learned some steps and then we came out of practicing. So when we get involved again with something, it's sometimes, and especially if we've got a reason, right now we've got a strong reason to work ourselves in a way that improves our lung health, which also, by the way, improves our cardiovascular health, so circulation throughout the body. And I'm going to go over a little bit of the anatomy background of that today. That's part of our topic. But if you'll see in your handout, we're in part number four today, and we're going to be practicing a prolonged exhale and a prolonged inhale as part of our lesson plan today. These are specific pranayama, the anuloma and the pratyaloma pranayama. Although I often modify things so that they're not absolutely the most traditional fashion, in order to give you a chance to catch on to them. And so there are, if you're saying that's not the way I was taught that before, it's like you're probably right. There are many different ways to create these breathing practices, and doing something traditionally might be your preference, but also there's a nice interpretation of them that I'm trying to give to us. Plus today, just like last time, we have a modern breathing technique that, although almost all breathing techniques come from the traditions of the earliest breathing techniques associated with meditation and things like pranayama, there's plenty of new things that people do and for specific reasons. Has anyone been practicing their breathing technique when they're not in class?
Yes.
Yeah, good. All right. It doesn't take a lot of practice to produce tremendous improvements in your ability. Mostly what it takes is a focus that will allow you to practice for even just 2 minutes a day. Because could there be benefit to doing it for longer than 2 minutes a day? You bet there is. However, the first thing is to do something persistently, repeatedly, day after day after day. And that's why I suggest that, the best way to get started is to just do a couple of minutes of the breathing practice. Maybe do it before you go to bed at night, because there you are. You have your little sheet right there, practice something, watch the, or listen to the audio again, and catch up with those specific techniques. So that might be a great way for you to end your day or begin your day. So it needs to be tied into something that's specific, because if we're trying to create a habit, the best thing to do is to associate it with something we already do, to do it persistently for many days on end. There's a theory that it takes 21 days in a row to produce a habit, and that's a little bit too, specific. Really, it does take persistent practice. And the more you're able to do something persistently, the more you begin to develop that, and it would naturally get longer as you're practicing it. So good work for those who are practicing more than just when we're meeting together. And it's okay if you're not practicing, because my goodness, there's a lot of distractions out there that are going on. So maybe this week will be the week that you'll begin to practice just a little bit more. Now also, if you would like to ask me questions, as I'm going through that, my thought would be best to hold those questions toward the end of class. Maybe make it, jot the note down, or do a chat that says things. I will occasionally break in and ask you for your comments, and so at that point we can. But I want to have a nice smooth presentation for you, so I won't be interrupting with various questions until very certain points within our action. So let's talk now about the right postures. I can see most of you are sitting up right now, and that's great. But you know, a lot of people prefer, when we do breathing techniques, to come into a reclined position. And that can work very well, either reclining on your back or onto your side, or even on your stomach, will allow you to practice some really good breathing techniques. Although listening to the lecture, you can also do that in those positions as well. But the posture that has to allow a separation between the rib cage and the pelvis. We don't want to be in a position where we're just crowded forward and we're doing our breathing practice in a hunched over position. So that's something to be avoided. And you've got to be comfortable in the position long enough to continue the practice for at least a couple of minutes. So it's one of the things that you work on, and you may hit upon just a perfect chair or a reclined position that helps you the very most. And so keep looking for that to create the right posture, because although, you know, as I said, we want to have the rib cage opened up and pressure taken away from the areas that we're breathing into, other than that, any of those positions will work. Now, we are going through some of the traditional pranayamas, and pranayama is a very dedicated book. In fact, if you're wanting to learn more on it, a great book out there is called Light on Pranayama, although there's many different books out there on it. In that pranayama, there are basically what's considered four stages of the traditional pranayama breathing. They're called the Aramba, the Gata, the Parashe, and the Nispati. And basically, these are just ways of describing how a person is getting involved with the pranayama. The first stage is when our interest in pranayama is awakened. So we're probably all in that Aramba stage. We're interested in it. And then when we begin to practice it more, we go through the other stages. Eventually, that last stage is where the yogi's going beyond their physical body and uniting with the Supreme. I don't think we're there, because I can actually physically see you right now. So we'll take a little bit of time before we get all the way to the end of that pranayama. But as I said, there's a lot of strong traditions about pranayama training. And we're hitting on the topic, you know, somewhat lightly, in order to allow it into our lives where we can start to get used to it. With that, we're going to be practicing, first off, a basic breathing practice. It's called the 4-7-8 method. Have any of you ever practiced the 4-7-8 method before? Ah, okay, a couple of you have. Okay, very good. This is a breathing technique developed by Dr. Andrew Weil. And so you may have been introduced to it, you may have heard about it before. It is a great one. There is a point in that breathing practice where we're supposed to make a whooshing noise by breathing out through our mouth. So what's a whooshing noise, right? So basically, you just take a deep breath in, and when you exhale, just that is a whooshing noise. If you can hear the noise and it sounds sort of like a whoosh, you did it, okay? So these are going to be inhaling nose, and then the exhale is going to be going out through the mouth. And so that is going to be the practice that we'll be practicing first, is this 4-7-8 method. Now, it is one of these pausing breath. It is trying to control the duration of our breathing. And understand that these numbers were chosen to give a shorter duration of the inhale, a pause that's longer than the inhale, and an exhale that's longer than the pause. And if you've become uncomfortable in any way with these, just inhale and exhale as you would normally. But let's get into a position where we're comfortable, and let's practice this first Dr. Weil technique called the basic breathing practice. And before we actually get it, once you're in your comfortable practice position, I just want you to be breathing, and I want you to be counting the numbers of seconds it takes for you to inhale and counting the number of seconds that it's taking for you to exhale. This is some very important information for us, our inhale duration, our exhale duration, because we're going to be changing and challenging that inhale and exhale duration. So it's good to know what we're starting with. And when you're ready, you're going to make an exhale by whooshing through your mouth, just your regular exhale. And then you're going to inhale through your nose for 4 seconds. Pausing for 7. And then whooshing out for 8. We repeat, inhaling for 4. Pausing for 7. Exhale, whooshing for 8. Inhale again, 4. Pausing, 7. Exhale, whoosh for 8. One more round, inhale for 4. Pausing, 7. Exhale, whoosh for 8. Now go back to your breathing, your regular breathing. In and out, inhaling and exhaling. All right. Now that might have been just a little bit strange. How are you feeling at this moment? Were you able to do it?
Yes.
Okay. So we might have been able to do it. It might have made us feel at certain points that we were a little bit straining, right? That we weren't quite in keeping with it. And so four breath pattern might be harder to do right now. And so you've got
can
to...
Can you mute us, Julie? Can you mute all? I'm hearing lots of noise.
Sure. Let me control it all. Let me mute. Okay, great. And you can unmute yourself if you need to, or chat with me if you need to. So in that, it may be difficult at first because we're trying to control our breath. And there's a bit of resistance at first. I mean, we breathe the way we breathe, okay? And so if you're having a struggle with it, then just control it. You know, maybe you say, I can't pause. I can't just take only 4 seconds in. We'll take it for a little bit longer. I can't pause for all 7 seconds. We'll pause for a little bit shorter. I can't exhale with a whoosh for all 8 seconds. Well, okay. All right. The control of things, the action, the desire to create the change is what we're really after. And this method will become easier with practice. Now, the idea of a shorter inhale, a longer pause, a longer exhale is causing us to breathe in a very particular pattern. This is not the only breathing technique, but it is one that's out there. It's one that a few of you have been introduced to before. And it's a common one, and it's not a bad one. You may find that this is like, okay, really great because you can remember it. And that's another thing. Can we remember all the details about every breathing practice? This one's pretty simple. And so that might make it a good candidate. And also just for variety, you might want to switch between it and other things that you're doing. But there you go. A basic breathing practice that you can apply, that you can work through and get going. But remember, these breathing practices, these control of breathing, they start with the very basic breathing. Let's remind ourselves of just a few of the others that we've practiced before that were simple. And the first of those is simply the belly breath. These are muscular areas that need to be developed. So if you're not learning to breathe into your belly and expanding that and training that diaphragm muscle, you're going to have a little bit more of a resistance with any other of the breathing practices. So right now, in your comfortable position, make sure that there's nothing binding around your waist that's in between your rib cage and your navel area especially. So we don't want anything that's cinching us in tight. We need to be able to expand. In fact, the whole belly expanding outward is the best thing for this practice. We're going to be exhaling completely, and this one's very simple. We're just going to be breathing into the belly and expanding it outward as much as possible. It lasts however long it lasts, and then we're just going to be exhaling slowly. Now, I like the concept of knowing how long I'm inhaling versus exhaling. So breathing in and counting the number of seconds and trying to feel your waistband expanding and trying to feel the change in the belly, and then exhaling and counting the number of seconds that you naturally exhale for. This is important information about you that you need to know. And although there are many different ways to breathe, some are a little bit better at giving us more oxygenation. So there's the deep belly breath. Now, if we're breathing forcefully, if we're breathing rapidly, we're going to over or hyper-oxygenate ourselves, and that hyperventilation is going to produce a sensation much like a little bit of dizziness or lightheadedness, maybe even sensations around the mouth. You might start to feel anxious, and if any of that begins to happen, or you suspect that it might happen, just go back to your regular breathing. Don't do too many deep breaths in a row before you just alter and change until you start to get used to it. So it takes a while to gain that practice. Now, there are other areas that we breathe into. Let's isolate. We were isolating the belly. Let's isolate these other areas of breathing that will eventually turn into our four-part breath. So for right now, I want us to, once we've exhaled, actually tighten up the belly, because we're going to be focusing on breathing into the sides from the ribs toward the underarm. So your inhale tries to spread your rib cage outward. And then exhale very slowly. It may or may not be as deep of a breath as you were able to bring into your belly, but you're trying to engage these respiratory muscles that we're going to find by trying to breathe in to the side of our chest. And we do so to isolate by tightening up the belly so we don't breathe in there. So when you're ready, breathing in belly tight to this rib section. And then exhaling very slowly. It may feel like things are stretching or an odd sensation in the body, and that's fine. We may not be used to actually separating our ribs apart, because our typical breath is here in the collarbone, not out to the sides trying to swell outward. Now, somewhat similar to the side of the chest breathing is the back of the rib cage breathing. And in fact, there's a tremendous reserve volume of air that can fit into the back of the rib cage. So this time, as you're exhaling, pull that belly in, keep it tight, and try and breathe into your lower back and shoulder blade region. And then you exhale slowly. It can somewhat help to let your shoulders round forward. That may actually happen as you're breathing in. These are muscles that pull the rib cage away from the lungs, and that's how they fill up the back of the chest space. Let's try it again. After fully exhaling, belly tight, think of the back of your body filling with breath. Breathe into the lower back and the shoulder blade region. It may feel like a stretch, and then exhale that breath slowly away. Great. Now the fourth part is that collarbone. It's lifting the whole rib cage up to breathe that way into the collarbones, and it trends towards a shallower breath. But we're going to do it because it's part of the four-part breath. So after exhaling, we're going to hold our belly tight and breathe in, trying to lift the collarbone space. Breathing out slowly. We'll do it again. With the belly tight, breathing in, trying to lift the collarbone space. And exhaling slowly. Okay. And so that action, that breathing into the collarbone space, as I said, typically a very short breath. We do it, we lift up. It's actually a very energy use type of breathing. But now we're going to use it as the final part of our breathing. We're going to start in the belly. We're going to be moving into the sides and then into the back of the chest and finally into the collarbone, all in the same breath of air. So let's make sure that we're going to exhale now as completely as we can. And we're going to breathe in to the belly and into our sides and into the lower and upper back. And also fill the collarbone. Take as much air in as you possibly can, and then exhale slowly, 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 slowly. Now that might have been a much bigger breath of air, but try it again when you're ready. Into the belly, into the sides, the lower back, the shoulder blade, the collarbone. Just expand your body with your breath. And then exhale slowly, 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 slowly. Try two more of those four-part full, we could call it a complete breath. Slowly and completely exhale. Be sure on your next deep breath, count that number of seconds it's taking for you to draw in that full and complete breath. Count the number of seconds it's taking to exhale that full and complete breath. And then go back to your regular breathing. Now, we did those breathing techniques. I'll take us off mute for a moment. How are you feeling? Everybody doing okay?
Yep.
Yeah. Were you able to sort of figure out the different areas of breathing? Was that working a bit for you? Those are some very basic practices, okay? So we're going to be moving onward now. Remember, you can always send me a chat or something if you need to ask me a question. I'll certainly answer them all. But I'm going to hit us into a full mute again. All right, because we're going to talk now about some anatomy. And I think by providing a little bit of the anatomy, the science behind things, we tend to understand things to a greater degree. So we're going to be on, this is going to be page starting with page number 3 of your handout. We're going to be talking about the anatomy of breathing in regards to circulation. Because that's where that oxygen's going to go. It's a very complicated and complex relationship. Our heart, our lungs, our blood vessels, the red blood cells that I talked about last time, and even the nervous system, they're all in combination in order to create changes within our heart rate, our blood pressure, the oxygenation of our tissues. It's a very complex relationship between all of these systems, and when it's doing very well, we are in experiencing maximum health. And when it's going very poorly, if even one of these systems is not functioning very well, it disengages the entire rhythm. So having a problem within our lungs creates a problem within our heart, within our circulation overall. Having a problem with the nervous system's control over these things creates a problem with the oxygenation of our tissue. So it's feeding in all together, and all of these things have to work very well, of course, to have the circulation. But one of the primary things that is important is the actual heart itself. Now, the heart is not that beautiful shape that we have for Valentine's Day. The heart is a rather muscular organ. It is typically located on the left side of our chest, although if you're very tall and lean, it tends to come into a more central position. So not everyone is dedicatedly getting a heart on the left side of their chest. In fact, the heart takes up enough space that the left structure of our lung has one less lobe. It's only got two lobes, whereas the right structure of our lung has three lobes. That's how much the heart takes up space within the lung structure. The muscular organ of the heart is pumping the blood that fills its chambers, and it's got four chambers, two on the left side, two on the right side. And the muscle system of the heart is very similar to our skeletal muscle, the thing that controls the bending and moving of our joint structures. But it's a very specialized, what's known as a cardiac muscle. So it's a very particular type of muscle. And I love the numbers of it because typically, if we're in fairly good shape, our heart's going to beat around 72 beats per minute. But you know, if we get in really good cardiovascular shape, that number is going to come pretty low. And if we're not in very good shape, it could be rather high. But if our average was 72 beats per minute, if we live in an 80-year lifespan, that's 3 billion heartbeats. Over 3 billion, that's a rather large number of heartbeats. We're pumping somewhere between 4 to 6 liters of blood per minute, and it's going to be about 9 to 11 ounces of a heart there in a woman and about 11 to 12 ounces in a man. It's only about the size of our fist, and it's in between this front of our chest and the vertebrae in the space, as I said, mostly to the left. So if you got your fist right there, that's about the size of the heart, and it's just so very important. It's not that big in there. And as I said before, there's four chambers of it, and it's important to, in a way, understand that that two of them are receiving centers. The blood enters in two of those atrium, the top chambers, and it leaves the heart through the bottom, known as the ventricles. The cardiac cycle is the first contraction of the upper chambers to send the blood that's within them into the lower chambers, and then the second is a contraction of the lower chambers to send the blood from those upper chambers into either in the right side, it's going to be going into the lungs, and in the left side of you, it's going to be going into the circulation of the body. So that is the basis of that. And in your handout, you'll see a pretty good depiction, very simplified on page 3, depiction of the chambers of the heart. And so the right heart is all about getting this blood that's coming from the body into the lungs, okay? And this is what we call the used air portion. So this is the deoxygenated blood that's going to be entering into the right side, into that atrial chamber, going into that right ventricle, and then entering into the blood system, the circulation of the lungs, where it's then going to be the carbon dioxide is going to leave the blood cells, and they're going to pick up new oxygen in it. And once they've gone through the lungs, then they're going to re-enter the heart through the left atrial chamber that's going to pump into that left ventricle, and then that left ventricle is going to send it into the rest of the body as circulation. And so there's these valves that control, so there's no backup of the blood from the contraction of the atrium into the ventricle. And the right and left side, they contract at the same time. So the atrium contracts first, both sides, and then the ventricles, they contract second, both sides, and that simultaneous process happens. Now, in that action, the entire beat lasts less than a second. It's about 0.8 seconds. And it's created by an electrical center that's inside the heart itself. It's so important that the heart tells itself to beat this way. It's not coming from the brain. There'd be too much lag time. It's coming through a very particular node within the heart that tells the heart to maintain its rhythm. And we can tell the rhythm of the heart because those electrical signals pass all the way to the skin, and so we can attach these little ECGs to us, and we can tell if the heart health is well or if there's any particular issues associated with the heart just from telling its electrical charge and how that's going on. And that's a very complicated process because the heart rhythm and the beat of that is something that that we learn to identify. A doctor specializes in identifying that particular rhythm. And so if we've got something going wrong with the rhythmic beating of our heart, it can again be one of the things that creates a change overall in the circulation of blood into our lungs or into our body system. Now, if we have a problem in our lungs, let's just say our lungs, for whatever reason, cannot accept the circulation of the heartbeat, then that's going to cause stress to the heart itself. The heart cannot get the blood supply into the lungs. And for that reason, sometimes we might have a backup of the blood supply into the lung, creating a change. Or let's just say we have a reason that the blood cannot get into circulation. That could make the left side of the heart more stressed. And sometimes we see changes in the heart that are so stressed that the heart actually enlarges. So that enlargement of the heart can be because we can't get the circulation, and that creates a less efficient heartbeat for the body. Now, the transport of this blood supply from the heart is done through the blood vessels. We've got blood flow. We've got the flow of blood in one direction and the other. So if the blood is flowing and it's deoxygenated and it's moving toward the heart, this is a vein system that's carrying it there. And if the blood is oxygenated and it's flowing away from the heart, that's an artery system that's taking that oxygenated blood away. Now, the structure of the arteries is a little bit more muscular than the veins, because it's having to create a change and a movement of that very important oxygen-rich blood. The veins are a little bit more of a passive system flowing backward. Another great big number that I love, the total length. If we were to combine every artery and every vein and every capillary, which is the tiniest part of the blood vessels, it would be a total of over 93,000 miles in length. Now, that's always just amazing to me, that we've got 93,000 miles of stuff inside of us. That's just mind-boggling to think that there it is. It's some of it is larger and some of it's smaller. So the arteries are different sized. Aorta is the largest. It's directly connected to the heart. It's getting the biggest volume of blood supply there. And it's going to go through smaller, the carotid artery, subclavian, the celiac trunk, the mesenteric, the renal, and the iliac artery, until it finally comes down to the size that it's interacting with the cells. And those are the capillaries, the very smallest of the blood vessels. And the veins are also different sizes. So coming from the connecting to the capillaries and taking it, we've got what's known as venules and then veins, and then larger, the subclavian vein, jugular vein, renal and iliac vein. And then the vena cava are the two largest veins that carry the blood directly from into the heart structure. So we've got this nice little system going to and out of our body. And as I said, I'm just touching very lightly on these things, but to understand that it's not just, hey, you know, our lungs have to be good for oxygenation of our tissue. It's also that we have to have a heart that beats very well. We have to have a nervous system that's working well. We've got to have blood vessels that are able to create that transport. So there's a lot in the system that is interdependent with itself. So by creating this, you know, muscular effect to draw more air into the lungs, we are making better a very important part of a multi-tiered system to improve and enhance the oxygenation of our tissues. But these other things have to work very well with us too. And maybe this helps us understand that a person with pre-existing conditions that has coronavirus, they're gonna be a lot more challenged, not just the coronavirus we know attacks specifically the lung structure. But if you have a pre-existing condition within your heart, within your blood vessels, within your nervous system, that's going to make things all that much worse. And even in healthy people, there can be something that just derails the overall health because of the challenge to the system that's too strong. So as I said, understanding a little bit more about the structures of anatomy can help us understand the challenge that we have in getting through the threat that the COVID has to us right now. But it's important to understand that we do have power. We can make ourselves healthier. And right now, one of the things that we probably haven't been as focused on is challenging our lungs in a way that is going to make the muscular system stronger. Now, we did in our first work and in previous classes, we've been doing things that create a pausing of the breath. That's the Dr. Weil technique we practiced today. It was pausing of the breath. But when we're about to now practice the prolonged inhale and exhale, it's not exactly pausing. And that's a little different. It's rate of breathing. Okay, so it's not stopping, complete cessation and pausing. We're trying to control and produce a difference in the duration of either the exhaling breath or the inhaling breath duration. Now, this may or may not produce a change in the volume of breath. It's thought that as we relax more, that our volume of breathing will increase, but it's about duration of breathing. In this technique, there will be one of the ways that we practice it where we will be lightly blocking the nostrils. And we learned about blocking the nostrils in the alternate nostril breathing method, where we had the hands on a very complicated one side and the other side. In this method, my suggestion is that we're going to be using a little gentle pressure, that we use two hands, that we get in a position where both hands are available to us so that there's no confusion about how to do this. And we're not blocking so much that we cannot either, in the practice, exhale or inhale, whichever one we're working on. So just for right now, I want you to know that we're not blocking by putting fingers in our nostrils. We're not blocking by just collapsing that outer area. There's a little space that's right above the nostril line that if we were to touch and touch lightly, we can control a little bit. It's like sort of turning off the garden hose ever so slightly. So just for a moment, I want you to find that area that when you touch it lightly, you control either the amount, the duration of inhale, or the duration of the exhale. And you can use the one-hand method if you're good at that. So just see if you could not completely block, but just reduce. Now, if you're like me and you have sinuses that naturally block the inhale or the exhale of your air, you might actually have to open one side so it matches up with the other side. We're going to be treating both of the nostrils the same. We're not going to be trying closing one off more than the other in order for our particular practice. The first practice is going to be the Anuloma Pranayama, or also known as the prolonged exhale practice. So, and here's the thing. I don't want you to practice for long periods at a time, so we're not going to do this for a prolonged period. We're going to be doing three different practices with it. If you feel uncomfortable, lightheaded, anxious, out of breath, just go back to normal breathing, and your body's going to relax and you'll be just fine. But let's find a position where we can get a bit comfortable. And during this one, we're going to be prolonging the duration of the exhale by using fingers to close off the nostrils a little bit. So let's have you take an inhale deeply through both nostrils, and then very gently using your fingers, partially close both nostrils and slowly exhale, but don't use any force. And this is what we're going to be doing for the next couple of minutes. So when you're ready to inhale again, you just take the fingers away. You can even pull it out the nostril area so you can inhale more easily. And then ever so lightly, just control the amount of exhale that's able to come through the nose. You're going at your pacing. Remember, you can inhale whenever you want. You're just trying to slow down that exhale. You can exhale whenever you want. You're just trying to slow it down. And then when you've exhaled that next time, just relax and breathe normally. I'm opening up the... Okay, any questions about that? Were you able to slow down the amount you were exhaling with that technique? Did that work for you at all?
Yeah, it took a little practice.
It took a little practice, yeah, it does. It does. We're having to figure out how do we control this thing we have, this nostril, this facial area. What's the way to do it, right? It's going to take a little bit of practice to get good at it. Know that if you were experiencing uncomfortableness, awkwardness is normal. Awkwardness is not what we're worried about. There's going to be awkwardness with this. You're like, didn't quite get it. That's okay. I'm not worried about awkwardness. Anxiety or feeling more nervous or upset about it, okay, just back off a little bit. Just let yourself get used to it. It's okay. But now we're going to have another practice. It's just a little bit different. I'm going to turn off the noise again. Here we go. Boop. All right, now we're going to be prolonging that inhale. So same finger to nose kind of thing. We're just going to be exhaling deeply, and then we're going to be preventing our inhale to be the full volume at once by using those fingers, okay? So get comfortable. When you're ready, you're going to exhale completely, and then use those, your favorite fingers, and you're going to partially close and inhale deeply, but slowly, until your lungs are full. Whenever you want to, then you just exhale, no blockage, just for as long as you're comfortable with. And then when you're ready, you're going to block a little, then you're going to inhale, partial. Your rate, your breathing rate. Do another full breath and full exhale. All right. Now, was that a lot different than the first method?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little different, isn't it? At least a little.
Yeah.
It's like I found that it was harder to breathe in. I didn't need to block it. It was already blocked for me. So, I'll tell you this. Whatever response you're getting, whatever reaction your body's having, perfectly valid, very good. But we're guiding our mind and we're doing something with our breath that we normally don't. We're making ourselves notice. We're making ourselves notice things that we normally don't. And here's my favorite way to do this prolonged, either on the exhale or inhale. We're just going to practice it right now as a prolonged exhale. It's not by blocking anything. I don't need anything to be blocked. I'm going to use a counting method. I'm simply, by my own force of will, going to slow things down. A lot of times this one works great because you imagine what it would be like to, so for example, we're going to be doing the counting method for the prolonged exhale. We're going to be imagining what it'd be like to breathe out through a straw. Now you can breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth if you like, or in through your nose, out through your mouth. Never just inhale through the mouth, all right? Because we want to have the normal, you know, brushing of all the dust off of our air before it enters our lungs. But in this, we're simply going to be using a counting method in order to get us to get a longer breath. Now, we're going to start off with a smaller number of prolonging when we're counting, and then we'll gradually be increasing at our comfort level. The inhale duration should remain approximately the same, if not getting longer, and that exhale duration we're going to steadily and gradually make longer, 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 okay? So get comfortable again, and we'll do my favorite method here. So, after you've taken your next inhale breath, notice the number of seconds it's going to take you to take that full inhale breath. As you exhale, notice the number of seconds it's taking for you to complete that exhale and see if you can add on a second or two. And then when you're ready, you're going to draw on that deep inhale. Count the number of seconds it takes to draw in that deep inhale. Fill up as you can. And then when you're ready, you're exhaling again, just trying to slow it down so you're adding on more seconds. You might be surprised. It may be easy to add on 2, 4, 6 more seconds. Now, whatever your indrawn breath is, whatever the duration is, you're exceeding that. You're making the exhale last longer than that inhale, just by slowing down as if you're just breathing out through a straw. And you may find that it's rather easy to get a lot more seconds. In fact, with this breathing technique, this full deep breathing in and the very slow exhale, it is possible to exhale for nearly double the duration of your inhale. Those of you that are comfortable with that kind of challenge, just see what it would be like. If you're feeling like it's troublesome to even add a couple of seconds on, just work with that. We never want to feel like we're gasping for the next breath of air. But let's try for 3 more deep inhales and just deliberately slow exhales. See how many more seconds we can make that exhale last versus the inhale. Now, when you are completing your next deep exhale breath, then return to your normal breathing pattern. Were you able with that technique to increase your exhale duration? Yeah, it didn't require fingers to nose or anything like that, which means that, hey, we can use it at times when we're out and about and we're not supposed to touch our face. Hey, how fun.
I could only do 16 in, 18 out.
Okay. All right. That's okay.
The idea of doing double out, just, I can't imagine that.
It's all right. It's no worries. Because whatever you were doing, you were in control of your breathing. You actually turned what was an automatic process into something that you were conscious of. You were successful, mm-hmm. no matter what the numbers were. That's really important to understand. The fact of the matter is we've been doing a couple of minutes at a time. We've done several breathing practices today. Mm-hmm. And that is successful, okay? So yeah, there's an idea that maybe we would breathe out. But you know, here's the thing also. If we were breathing in for a number of seconds and breathing out for a number of seconds, our rate of breathing per minute went way down, but our oxygenation went way up. All right, that's also successful because we're being more efficient. So these are the positive benefits. Not because we say, oh yeah, we wear it on a t-shirt. I can exhale double the duration of my inhale. I mean, that'd be a great t-shirt. But also, it's a situation where we are improving. We're getting better, okay? We're getting better. Great, now we have time for the next thing I wanna do, which I'm gonna show you some physical acts that can improve both your circulation as well as your breathing. So, if you would like to join me, I'm going to turn the sound off again. If you'd like to join me, we're going to come into a standing position, and I'm going to show you a wide leg forward bend that enhances your capacity for breathing and also puts you in a position where it also changes your circulation just a little bit. So I'm going to come into a position where I'm standing, and this wide leg forward bend actually is a fairly comfortable forward bend, at least as far as I'm concerned. I don't want you to do anything that would make you feel unpleasant, but take your feet to even wider than your shoulders if you're comfortable with that. And what we're going to do is elongate the front of our body, stretching ourselves up. We're going to bend through our knees and position our elbows on our knees. And that's what it looks like from the front, and I'm going to show you what it looks like from the side. So my feet are wider, and then I elongate the front of the body. I come down, my elbows are resting on my knees. And we just sort of pull gently forward. Now you can already feel that that's creating a bit of a stretch. And you can stay level as I'm staying level, but you can also lift your hips up, tilting your head slightly lower and producing a mild stretch in the back of your legs. In this position, we can come out. We can reduce the change just by lowering or raising the position. Now, while we're here in this posture, we're increasing circulation into this head area, the neck, the shoulders, by just lifting the hips, sending the circulation there. In this position, try and take a deep breath into your belly. Just expand it into your sides, into your lower and upper back and collarbones. And then just exhale slowly, 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 slowly. We'll try another deep breath in. And slow exhale. Now to come out, we send the hips down a bit. We put our hands to our knees. We lift up part way. We've changed our circulation. So we're going to pause here, lifting the chin and looking forward. It's always a good idea before standing completely upright to pull in the belly so that when we come up, we don't just send that blood pressure plummeting down toward the feet. Okay? So we just create that nice little tilt position into a forward bend and come up out of that in a comfortable way. All right. How are you feeling now? How is that forward bend for you?
Oh.
It can be sort of nice if you've been sitting for a while to create a bit of a stretch. It puts traction in your spine, and it helps in several ways. Let me see what what the questions are. Let's see, I read today the hospital personnel are putting COVID-19 people on their stomachs, and gravity helps a lot. One of the comments on the article said they used their inversion table when they were sick, and it helped a lot in emptying their lungs of junk with regard to position and breathing. Okay. And the 93,000 miles of blood vessels is only one of the bodily things. It's true. There is a lot of stuff going on in the body. Okay. What questions do you have right now for me? Anything on your mind right now? Yes, Colette. Up in the corner there.
I'm a nurse and often work standing a lot. Is that an energizing book? I remember seeing a booklet where they say if you need energy, if you're feeling low energy, that you can assume that position and that breathing, go like the bathroom or closet or something. Is that what they would call an energizing book?
Oh, absolutely. I would tell you that there's a reason for it being an energizing pose. Number one, we put our head below our heart level. Now that increased circulation to the head. Now we wouldn't want to leave ourselves in that position for very long if we were challenged with blood pressure being too high or other reasons that we didn't want the blood supply in our head. But let me tell you, it is a relieving of stress. It tractions the spine very easily. It's a fairly easy to get into, stretching the hamstrings, reversing the gravitational pull. It is an exceptionally good pose for both circulation as well as opens up the rib structure, the belly structure, allowing a more deep breath. So it is one of my favorite positions to get into if I've been out, especially if I've been sitting or compressing or in other ways just loading up the spine. It's an unloading, and that would make it a very energizing type pose as well. So absolutely. Very good. Any other questions you have? Any other comments? Any other things going on?
Julie, I was on the floor and I did not get to see what your mouth looked like when you were doing the whooshing exhale.
Oh, okay, the whooshing exhale. Here it is. Just sort of a... just trying to make a sound with my mouth.
Okay.
You might be able to make a whoosh. You know, maybe that was the whoosh. That would work too.
Okay.
It's really up to you. It's there was, you know, and if you probably, although I didn't look it up, probably Dr. Weil has a video of him doing the whoosh the way he does the whoosh. So, you know,
right.
Maybe there's
one
a...
other question.
Sure.
When we were doing the deep breath exhale, should the mouth be open or closed?
You know, you can exhale through your mouth at any time. If you want to use that method of exhaling and you find that that actually enhances your exhale, it can be through the mouth, especially
okay.
if you would have a tendency of blockages in the sinus that would be troublesome to you. You can exhale through your mouth. I always say the best inhale is one that's coming in through the nose. Now, I want you to breathe, okay? And if you have to gasp for breath and breathe through your mouth, by all means, okay? But there's a system of the reason we breathe through the nose is because it's taking away some of the particulate matter from the air. It's slightly warming the air. And you can feel it right now. If you breathe in through the nose, just try it. You can feel that coming through the structure of the sinus. It ricochets off the upper palate. It swirls down the throat, hitting other layers of little cilia there, and then right at the collarbone area, you'll still feel the coolness because it's not that warm. It begins to go into the lungs right about that level right there, entering the larger bronchial tubes.
Right.
So if we breathe right in, we miss all of that passage that sort of blocks the things that that you know keep the dust out of our nose, you know, or out of our lungs, kind of thing. Right. But like I say, if you gotta breathe, you gotta breathe. So you know, whatever you do. The most important thing is to practice your breathing techniques with a kindness and a gentleness so that you're not forcing yourself into strong, you know, stressful situations where you're like, oh, I gotta breathe again because I paused too long. You know, it happens. It's happened to me before. It's like, oh, okay, I gotta breathe. Well, you know, get used to it, practice something. Yeah.
I have one last question.
Sure.
While during this class, I ordered a long time ago one of those oxygen meters that you put on your finger.
Oh, the pulse oximeters, yes.
And it just arrived. And what number is it good? I mean, I'm sure 100 is good, but what's normal? What's
all right.
The height?
Here's what I can tell you, that you're probably never going to see 100, but you're going to see, you know, maybe 99, 98, 97. When you start getting below 96, 95, 94, that's the concern. is if your oxygenation level starts dropping. If it goes below 90, we're really, really, really concerned. It could be that your little pulse oximeter, you know, if you're feeling fine and you've got really low numbers, your pulse oximeter could be wrong. But they are pretty interesting little gadgets. You know, I've got one, oh, we're talking about them. I've got one right here, a little pulse oximeter right there. And they just, they fit over and you turn them on and then you got to read them like this because, you know, otherwise it's upside down. Yes.
There was an article in the New York Times last Sunday that what is happening, I'm no medical professional, but what is happening with COVID-19 does not involve fluid or mucus buildup in the lung. Instead of oxygen for CO2. And so you must have an oximeter. They said everybody needed one because anytime your oxygen level goes below 90, you need to get help.
Right.
The problem with COVID-19 is they've had people down in the 70s who are having trouble breathing and no awareness of difficulty.
Okay.
The importance is if you start thinking maybe you're getting ill or something, to use one.
Right. Yeah,
you can order it. I ordered mine a long time ago and it just came today. I ordered it way back in March.
I've had these for years. I got them when we first started doing the workout training so that I could see what people's oxygenation was in association with efforts of exercise. And yes, you can still get them. They do take longer to arrive and of course their price has gone way up. But they are nice little gadgets. I was talking earlier with someone about the fact that in our own home, we need a thermometer, we need a blood pressure cuff, we need to have a pulse oximeter. These are some basic fundamental things that let us know stuff about ourselves. And you can still find them out there. So they're not completely all sold out because they've been out there for a while. And so my suggestion is get something like this. And yes, I'll tell you this, one news report, one woman was having trouble and the emergency people came to her and her oxygenation was still like around 96. Had it been like 95 or 94, they would have taken her in. But they weren't concerned about her because even though she was having symptoms, she was at 96. She was very frustrated with that. But that's one thing I've heard. And again, who knows? And I would agree, if your oxygenation is below 90, you're in trouble. You're in trouble.
Right.
But it's usually upwards.
The point of this article was it did not show. She was talking as we are talking. And the oximeter said she was at 70.
Oh, my goodness.
They intubated her. She was dead by morning.
Okay. So, yeah, this is a disease that we don't know the rules of. It is not acting like other things that we understand. It's not like the normal roots of pneumonia. And so, yeah, there is an attack on the lungs and there is an attack of the oxygen carrying capacity of the body that's happening in this. The pulse oximeter, a great thing to have. Of course, the thing that's going to help us the most is doing all the, you know, wearing your mask, making sure you're around other people that are wearing their masks, keeping your 6 to 10 to whatever feet away from other people that you can, and just controlling your environment as much as you can. But also, here we are doing something that's very positive. What are we doing? We're making our lungs be able to fill more, to stretch that tissue more, to strengthen the muscle structure that controls the filling and emptying of that lung. So if we get into distress, we're more capable of it, and we're more oxygenated, we're just healthier. And number one, right now, how are you feeling? Are you a little more relaxed?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're spending...
It's the depth of breath now that is fantastic. Or you really witnessing the... In taking a breath now, really filling up lungs. Really...
Yeah, that's something very important for us that we know that we can fill more than we ever knew we could. So that, yeah, again, remember, 6 liters fit in these lungs, okay? So that's really important to know that we've got a lot of capacity. We've been taking just sips of air when we can really fill up. And so let's work it daily a little bit. As I said, I'm including the exercises as well, all the things that help us. And remember, if you can't get to one of these sessions in a live stream, I am, you know, backdating, putting in the other sessions, and those are available as well as the handouts from each session. And we're just going to continue on with these, and I'm really thankful and happy that y'all are joining me, because I know this is one of those very positive things that
thank
we
you.
Can do. Excellent work, everyone. Remember, I've got lots of live streams going. It's just as simple as checking on my websites. If you can't find where the connections to those are, just let me know, and I will be very happy to send you that information. So excellent work, everyone.
Thank you.
Excellent.
So Heidi, I read the same article, and it was, this is why I started taking this class after having read that article.
Very good. Yeah, indeed. All right. You guys have an excellent rest of your Saturday, and I hope to see you next week as well. So y'all take care.
Thank you, Julie.
You're welcome. Julie. Good to see you. Bye-bye now.